This is Gulf Coast Life Arts Edition from WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. The inaugural season of the Player Circle Theaters continues with the company's upcoming production of The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. The play garnered 7 Olivier Awards, more than any other play in history, and is based on the best-selling novel of the same name by British author Mark Haddon. The story centers on the perspective of its lead character, Christopher Boone, a 15-year-old math savant seemingly on the autism spectrum, although the story doesn't explicitly say he has Asperger's. The story begins with Boone embarking on an investigation into the murder of his neighbor's dog and ends up discovering some much more impactful truths about his own life and family. Despite some controversy, the book and the play have been praised by many in the autism community for helping to raise awareness of autism spectrum disorders. And to that end, Players Circle Theater will also be hosting some audience talkback sessions accompanying select performances that will include cast members and local autism experts. The show opens with a preview performance next Tuesday, March 17th, before the formal opening of the show on Saturday, March 25th, and the show runs through April 12th. Joining me now for a closer look at the production are Players Circle Theater co-founders Bob Cassioppo and Carrie Lund. Bob is also the company's producing artistic director and the director of this production. Carrie Lund is Players Circle Theater's managing director and will serve as an acting role in the upcoming production. Bob and Carrie are longtime staples of Southwest Florida's art scene and no strangers to what it takes to build a new theater company from scratch. They previously founded the Florida Repertory Theater in downtown Fort Myers, where Bob was artistic director. Before that, they'd founded the Pirate Playhouse on Sanibel Island. Their acting, producing, and directing credits are impressive and, frankly, much too numerous to list now. But Bob Cassioppo and Carrie Lund, welcome to Gulf Coast Life Arts Edition. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
And we're joined in studio by the star of this upcoming production of The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, actor Harvey Evans. Evans is a unique talent. This British-born actor lives in Cape Coral and attends North Fort Myers High School. And in addition to numerous school-based productions, Evan has also appeared in past shows at the Florida Rep and the Broadway Palm Dinner Theater. Harvey Evans, thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you very much.
And we're also speaking with Leanna Nowak. She's coordinator of the Fort Myers Branch Office for the Center for Autism and Related Disabilities, or CARD, through the University of South Florida. She's been serving the autism community through this community-based project for the past 15 years, providing consultation and information to those on the autism spectrum, as well as education and training to families and professionals. She'll be participating in one of the show's audience talkback sessions as well. Leanna, welcome to Gulf Coast Live Arts Edition.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
And to engage with us and your fellow listeners about the conversation or any of our shows, find us on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Now, before we delve into this specific production, Bob and Carrie, let's step back and talk about Players Circle Theater. Last fall, I know you were in the process of raising the hundreds of thousands of dollars needed to cover new construction costs. But, you know, by the beginning of December, the company's first official production was ready to go. It's pretty impressive. Does it get easier? Because, I mean, you guys are old hats when it comes to building a brand new theater company now. Does it get easier?
I think that there are challenges for every time we've started a theater. And the one big challenge for us was that we were going into new territory, and we've discovered what an incredible group of the audience members in the North Fort Myers area. But we're going to be exploring a lot more further north in Punta Gorda and in those areas.
Yeah, no. Tell me about how the relationship with the Shell Museum came.
Oh, the Shell Factory?
I'm sorry, no, the Shell Factory came into play.
No, well, we're friends with the owner, Pam Cronin, and she saw our need. We had been searching for about a year for a space, and it just seemed like a perfect marriage that she has this. It's very unusual because with all of the activities the Shell Factory has, we'll be complementing that. And so she saw the benefits of our audiences coming on her campus, and then we also having a ready-made building. Of course, we've done an incredible job of the reconstruction for our theater.
Now, for the time being, are productions still being run out of the Shell Factory's Dolphin Room space?
That is now our theater. So it's completely altered, changed. We put up a wall. I'm going to sort of taking your steam here, Robert, if you want to have anything to say?
Oh, no, it's... Well, listen, it has been quite a journey. We were ready to go on December 2nd, our opening day, and the fire marshal found a fault in the fire alarm system in the Dolphin Room, and we were shut down for 8 weeks, which is... which was actually horrible. But you know what? We went with the old adage that the show must go on. Mm-hmm. And we moved the show under a tent. And it was the rainiest December in the history, like since 1925. But we did shows. We were Herons Glen, a great gated community, gave us a space. And we just kept the shows going. And finally, in about the third week in January, we got our certificate of occupancy. We moved our second show into that space, and we just completed a run of Laughter on the 23rd floor, completely in the theater. So, we're through the worst. We're in the space, and what's exciting is that we built a new arts organization that the donations help fund for this area. And what's amazing is I don't think people realize how close the Shell Factory is. It's literally less than 5 miles from downtown Fort Myers.
Yeah, just over the bridge.
What's
yeah.
great is that it's also, one-stop shopping. You can drive there 2 hours before the show, park once, have dinner in the restaurant, which is a wonderful restaurant. We also have a dinner theater package. You can see the show at intermission. There's a full service bar. So it's all right there. And I think once we listen, it always takes a while. I don't know if I was a shoe store, whatever business you were creating, it takes a while to spread the word. But the word is getting out there, and people in the community are realizing we have a gem. And it's going to be a very exciting future, I think.
I think Carrie kind of touched on this a bit, but do you think in a way that what you're doing now mirrors what you did with the Florida Rep? And by that, I mean, North Fort Myers isn't exactly known for its, performing
cultural
arts
scene.
Offerings. And at the same time, downtown Fort Myers was in need of a revitalization quite extensively whenever you decided to set up shop
22
there.
Years ago yeah. when we moved downtown, I was advised, don't go downtown. No one's downtown. Downtown's not a safe space. When I got support from the city, they offered me the arcade rent-free to start a theater. But I said, no, you have to also give me funding, because when I go to downtown, I'm always waiting for a tumbleweed to come rolling down the street like in the old Western.
Right.
And Councilman Mike Flanders, who was there with me in the beginning, used to say he could lay in the middle of 1st and Henry on a Saturday at 5 o'clock lay down in the street and no one would run him over because there was no car traffic. So literally, but often, often the arts come into a neglected area. Mm-hmm. And because quite honestly, that's the area they can afford. And then the arts come, then the people come, then the restaurants come, then the coffee shops. And certainly, we've been given a lot of credit for the revitalization of downtown. And I think our creating Florida Rep was a real changing point in downtown.
And I think also that while we were trying to find a location, the most important objective was that we would go where we were needed mm-hmm. and wanted. And so that was something that the Shell Factory, it was a great win-win situation.
All right. Well, moving more specifically into this play, I'm curious about what made you want to choose this and include it in your inaugural season?
Well, go for it.
Sorry, Carrie. Well, first of all, we saw the play twice in London and once on Broadway. It's an absolutely beautiful play. And through the last 35 years of producing in Southwest Florida, some of our proudest moments is when I always wanted to include one show that was hot and new. And unless our audiences flew to New York, got a hotel, bought a $150 ticket, they would never see it. So, over the years, like at Florida Rep, we put Florida Rep on the map by doing plays like Wit and Sideman and Art while they were still running in New York, or back 25 years ago at the Pirate Playhouse doing Other People's Money. So it's exciting to give the community something that they absolutely haven't seen. And quite honestly, I'm sort of was shocked that none of the other theaters in Southwest Florida scooped up this play. I agree, it's a very difficult piece, but I'm so excited that we have the opportunity to do this hot new piece.
I also think that we have a mechanism that can bring to our audiences some awareness and knowledge about the autism community, the autism spectrum disorder. And we have learned so much as company members in our investigating this subject. And it really is apparent to me that there's the knowledge is not our general audiences are not aware of it. And there's a stigma and people avoid those who have the disorder, not understanding that they're humans and they have all the same things that we each have.
Yeah. Leanna, this seems like a good point to bring you into the conversation. I know you were working with the autism community at the time that, you know, the book that this is based on came out, and it was quite a craze. I mentioned in my introduction there has been a little bit of controversy, like the author never actually specifically mentions the word autism, but it does seem pretty clear. And he also didn't really do any research into autism before writing the book. But I know there is a camp of folks who feel like the book and then the subsequent play really did a lot for just helping more people in the general population who maybe don't have any knowledge about autism create a greater sense of understanding. Did you find that to be the case?
When the book first came out, I read it right away. And in 2016, the Straz Theater in Tampa put on the production, and I saw that. It was great. It was wonderful. So I was very happy to be called by Carrie to assist in some of the autism awareness pieces that they would like to put together with the production. Yeah, I think it is helpful when we have more public information out about autism spectrum disorder, because a lot of times the general population just sees snippets of individuals who have autism spectrum disorder. It's an invisible disability. You can't look at somebody and know that they have that disability. And so the general public probably sees people who are on the spectrum and have no idea that they're seeing those people. About 1% of the population, currently it's 1 in 59 individuals who have the diagnosis. And so we're seeing them everywhere. But a lot of times what gets noticed is when they're having difficulty with some of their sensory constructs, or that they're having some behavioral challenges. And then we get kind of a negative information out into the public. And that Carrie said it beautifully, that, you know, they people who have autism spectrum disorder are just like any other people. They face the same challenges, the same experiences, the same interactions, but they do it in a different way because their brain works a little differently.
Right, right. I want to turn to Harvey Evans now. He is the star of this production. Well, actually, first, Bob, I want to ask you about why you decided to cast Harvey, because there seem to be a number of different ways that he seems uniquely ideal to play this role.
Well, obviously, we cast a wide net when we're looking at casting, and the role is normally played by a 29-year-old actor who's finished grad school and happens to be skinny and looks young, and that's what you do. And I can see the sense of it. But I had the pleasure of directing Harvey in To Kill a Mockingbird when you were 13?
I think I was 14. Yeah.
Oh, you were pretty old then. Okay. So when you were 14, and he was uniquely serious about what he was doing then and gave a wonderful performance in a big production, and we got along really well. And then a teacher at North Fort Myers Arts High School brought up Harvey to me and thought and reminded me of Harvey. And I thought, and this woman used to be my education director at Florida Rep. And Harvey came in and knocked it out of the park. And I think this is like worth national news, because I had never heard of a production that actually had a boy the same age play the boy. And I think it's going to add a special authenticity to it. And Harvey, you know, I mean, you're, you know, sometimes we're born with gifts. You know, we're born with a musical gift or born with a gift at math. Harvey is born with a gift to act, and he takes it very seriously. And I think it's going to make this production that much more authentic.
And Harvey, you know, aside from, you know, memorizing your lines, rehearsing, I know you did a fairly exhaustive amount of study and research in preparation for this role. Tell me about what you did.
I watched a lot of documentaries. There was a great documentary that was on the BBC that was made for the Curious Incident show when it was on over at the National Theater. And they went into a lot of interviews with parents of children with autism. And they really described to me how it is in their daily lives. And it really truly helped me for the show.
Did you find over the course of immersing yourself in this character that it kind of bleeds into your real life outside the theater in the sense that, like, I don't know, maybe you're experiencing something and then start thinking about it from the perspective of your character, Christopher?
Especially when I'm, like, if I'm just going down the road or something, Christopher has a very specific thing of how his day goes by with cars.
Yes.
So if he sees, like, four red cars in a row, it's a very good day for him. Or if he sees, like, multiple yellow cars in a row, it's not a good day for him. And, yeah, I've definitely incorporated that into my daily life.
And, you know, this play takes a lot of stamina. Bob tells me there's really hardly a moment in this performance where you're not going to be on the stage. What kind of regimen do you try to follow to keep up that energy?
I drink a lot of water. Whenever I get an extra second, I just gulp it all down and try and get as much as I can. And I don't exercise as much as I used to, but I still got the stamina when I was a little younger.
Right. And are you preparing to graduate from high school this year, or do you have one more year?
I have one more year. I'm currently a junior, yeah.
And then what? You got time to figure it out.
Hopefully I can go into like musical theater at any school. I'm still looking right now, and I'm thinking of places like Juilliard or maybe some places in California that I could possibly go to, or even like somewhere like FSU.
All right. And Carrie, you're among the cast as well. It's not a huge cast. Tell me about the role you play.
Well, I'm an ensemble member, and each of us have little cameo roles. I also play Mrs. Alexander, who seems to be a little bit of a snoop in the neighborhood. I see Harvey. And one thing about all of the ensemble members as the characters that we play, we're sort of coming upon Harvey in a way that, or in Christopher, and not recognizing his disorder. And we become a little difficult for him. It shows the dissonance that there is in that behavior with somebody who doesn't understand it. But I feel Mrs. Alexander is a little more sympathetic, and she likes to engage him, which is different than some of the other characters.
Mm-hmm. The ensemble represents, they sort of function as a Greek chorus, and they represent the world that has problems understanding the boy, and the boy doesn't understand the world. So, and what's cool is we're doing this show in the round. We have a 6-time Broadway designer. And so the cast, the ensemble, never leave the playing area. They are always on the perimeter watching and participating and helping to move along. It's a very exciting play because there are 58 scenes and locations. So it is very sort of cinematic in a way. And quite honestly, I've directed 200 professional productions. I walked into this one terrified. And sometimes the times I've been terrified have been the most rewarding experiences of my life. And the show, it's amazing how beautifully it's written, because it really does flow with not just drama, but humor and laughter and poignancy. And in the end, it's a path towards love, because this boy comes from a divorced family, and it was an ugly divorce, and the way the family comes together at the end.
Right. The other part about the ensemble is we are all different types of people, and we engaged a choreographer who took on the challenge of getting us to move on stage as a unit and really in our own body types. We're still doing the same like uniform movements, and it's fascinating. That combined with the sound and lights that we have, it's going to create that that chaotic state that Harvey goes through when he enters a subway or a train station, or you know, all the things, the environments that he's never been familiar with.
And what's great is you know, speaking about Player Circle and the theater we created a theater. Well, first of all, thanks to many people, we have $100,000 lighting system. This space is designed to transform for every show. So sometimes we're going to do a show in proscenium, sometimes three-sided, sometimes two-sided, and this show we're doing in the round. But we will adapt the theater to best serve the play. And it's going to be a very exciting space and very exciting for the audience to be so close to the action.
If you're just joining the show, we're exploring the Player Circle Theater's upcoming production of The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime with the star of the play, actor Harvey Evans, Player Circle Theater co-founders Bob Cassiopo and Carrie Lund, and Leanna Nowak of the Fort Myers branch office of the Center for Autism and Related Disabilities are with us as well. If you would like to comment on our conversation or engage with fellow listeners, find us on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. And Leanna, let's go ahead and talk about CARD, because I think maybe there's a lot of folks out there listening to this who probably don't know about this community-based service provider.
CARD is a grant-funded program through the Florida legislature, so some people may have heard of other centers for autism, or they may have heard of other CARDs. But CARD is unique to Florida. So like I said, we're a line item in the legislature, which means all the services that we provide are done free of charge. We are mandated to help teachers, to help families, to promote autism awareness, and then to help our communities whatever way they ask us to. We help teachers in a number of different ways. We do a lot of training. We can go into classrooms and help teachers set up their classrooms so it's more conducive to teaching individuals who have autism spectrum disorder. And we can also provide technical assistance to a teacher regarding a particular student, as long as the parent or guardian gives consent to do that. And then we help families. It's changed. I've been here for 15 years. I did more direct interaction with people that many years ago. But the autism spectrum disorder has become a lot more well-known, and a lot more resources have become available. And so now, 15 years later, probably most of what I do is through email and telephone. We keep a large database of providers who do therapies, that have activities, that are diagnosticians, and families and professionals can contact us to access those resources. And I do a lot of training. I just finished some online training with the Lee County Sheriff's Office. I do a lot of training with law enforcement in all five of the counties in this region that I support. And we do whatever is asked of us in terms of other presentations. I am going to, in 2 weeks, go to Immokalee to talk with teen parents about autism spectrum disorder and promote not just the information about autism, but the awareness in how they can interact with individuals on the spectrum.
It's interesting what you were saying about working with this community for 15 years now, and as awareness is raised, more services become available. I mean, that just makes sense. You know, you're not going to get those push for services if people don't even know there is a need out there. But do you think this is a community that remains significantly underserved? And I'm just thinking about even like a decade ago covering, conferences usually held in the Naples area, just about, what were they called? called exactly? Creating a future for adults with autism, and how when a lot of these folks do reach adulthood and they're out of the public education system and there just isn't a whole lot in the way of needed services, or there wasn't. Has that changed?
The amount of resources available has vastly improved in those 15 years. But if you follow autism spectrum disorder at all, you know the prevalence rate has increased a lot in that amount of time. When I started 15 years ago, I think it was one in 125 individuals. And now, like I said, it's 159. So even though we have improved our resources, it still isn't enough for all of the people who have the diagnosis. And I'll add a shameless plug since you talked about training.
Absolutely.
Every April is Autism Awareness Month. And for 13 years, next month will be our 14th year, we do a conference called Promising Pathways, the Road to Best Practice in Autism Spectrum Disorder. This year, it will be April 18th, Saturday all day. Our registration is open. You can find us on our webpage through FGCU. We also have a Facebook page and on Twitter. However, as this coronavirus is unfolding day by day,
right,
we're a little bit in the balance of whether or not we're going to be able to hold the conference this year, or if we need to look at maybe doing it online or postponing it for another date.
All right. All right. Well, we'll stay in touch on that. As a panelist in one of the audience talkback sessions that's going to accompany a performance of this play, I'm wondering what kind of new ideas or concepts you really want audience members to walk away with. Like, are there common misconceptions you'd like to maybe see put to rest once and for all?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that they're new.
Yeah.
Concepts, they're a long-term situation. One of the things that I said earlier is that a person who has autism spectrum disorder, their brain works a little differently. And we have research to show that. And what we need to remember is that typically if there's difficulty with communication or some behavioral challenges with a person who has autism spectrum disorder, it isn't that they don't want to do something, it's that they don't know how to do something. And so teaching is immensely possible for individuals who have the diagnosis, and you do have to parent a little bit differently than a typically developing child. But the way that parenting is done and teaching is done, they're just good teaching practices that work for anybody, not just individuals who have an autism spectrum disorder.
Bob, you wanted to weigh in?
Yeah, and in this play, the teacher is a major role, and the teacher is the one that encourages the boy to write the book and to turn it into a play. And there's a very poignant line at the end of the play where the boy, what does he say to the teacher?
Does that mean I could do anything? And he repeats that a few times at the end.
Does that mean I can do anything? And so in spite of his challenges with teaching and early discovery and support, they can do anything.
All right. Well said. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show, but I want to thank my guests, actor Harvey Evans, who plays the lead role of Christopher Boone in Player Circle Theater's production of The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. Harvey, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
We've also been speaking with the show's director and Player Circle Theater co-founder and producing artistic director, Bob Cassiopo, and his wife, partner in crime, fellow theater company co-founder, managing director and actor, Carrie Lund. Bob
thank
and Carrie, great to have you in studio.
Thanks.
Thank
so
you,
much.
John.
Also, thanks to Leanna Nowak. She's the coordinator of the Fort Myers Branch Office for the Center for Autism and Related Disabilities, or CARD, through the University of South Florida. She'll be participating in one of the audience talkback sessions that will accompany select performances of the play. Leanna Nowak, thanks so much for taking the time.
You're welcome.
Players Circle Theater's production of The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime begins next Tuesday, March 17th, with preview performances ahead of the official opening night on Saturday, March 21st. The show runs through April 12th with audience talkback sessions, including actors and autism experts associated with performances on Sunday, March 29th, following the matinee and prior to the show on Thursday, April 2nd. For more information, visit playerscircle.org. And for more information on the Center for Autism and Related Disabilities, visit card-usf.fmhi.org. www.usf.edu. I know that's a mouthful, but you can also go to our website, wgcu.org/GCL, to find that link. And from there, you can hear this or any of our episodes in full, or subscribe to our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by yours truly. Our director is Richard Ching Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.